Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hey, everyone. It's Asten Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome to Popcast Deluxe, your everything avant-garde of weekly cultural review. I'm John Caramonica, a critic of The New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at The New York Times.
Every week, we have a snack of the week at the end of the episode. This week, it's so cold.
And so newsworthy.
We got to lead with it. We have other things that we're going to talk about on this episode. We're going to talk about the kerfuffle at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I know all you kids are super pumped to talk about and hear about. We're going to talk about going behind the scenes with Diddy. Mm-hmm. We are going to talk about some unusual and cringy TikToks. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing happening in American popular culture, bar none, is the Ice Spice Munchkin drink.
Yes.
Look, we've done a lot on this show. Right. We've had Grimace Shakes. Mm-hmm. We've done a flight of Little Debbie snacks.
Yep.
But these are as zeitgeisty as the fudge rounds, I would say.
Yeah.
Maybe more.
Although when we popped into Dunkin' to make sure they had these in stock at our nearest Dunkin', pure snack culture criticism.
That is correct.
I asked the young woman behind the counter if she'd been selling a lot of them, and she said no.
We'll get into the weeds on that.
Yeah.
The short answer to that is this is far more important for the memes and the ads than it is for the consumption of whatever this is.
Though I have seen people drinking them on the subway alone.
And like not as a bit.
Like just as a normal
is that
as
like
a normal drink.
The new bowling alone is drinking the Ice Spice Munchkin drink alone.
And I did have to think to myself, like, are they just drinking a regular Frappuccino, which is something that people drink all the time, you know, like icy coffee drinks? And I more closely examined the label and saw, yes, in fact, there are munchkins in this drink, which is how I know it's the Ice Spice drink.
So this is, I would say this is melting, but it is so viscous, just even looking at it. We watched it be made. It's probably not melting, but like, let's just have it and then we'll get in the weeds.
Do we want to talk about what's in it or not yet?
Not yet.
I mean, the list of ingredients.
First of all, what I will say is it was resistant to the straw.
Yeah.
It didn't take the straw.
Yeah, you have to break through. You have to break the ground of the straw.
So it's not like a Slurpee. It's not like frozen ice. I mean, there is ice in here, but it's not that kind of like brittle, crispy texture of a Slurpee.
Right. You know what there's barely any of in here?
Coffee.
Yeah.
So these are, I want to say my trainer would probably give these to me to do like for a...
Oh, yeah. It's like 2 pounds?
Got to be 1.5 pounds. It's really, we did get the large.
Really heavy. Cheers.
Funk.
Oh, man.
Really get the pumpkin.
It's extremely sweet.
Do you think...
It makes the Grimace Shake taste like Athletic Greens.
Yeah. Do you feel it tastes different at different levels?
Yes. Let me just run down the ingredients on this thing before we get into impressions.
Pull up the thing?
All right.
Oh, right, mine here doesn't have one.
The first ingredient, four pumpkin munchkins. This is four donut holes blended up in this drink. Cream, of course. Caramel cup drizzle, which is when they coat the whole cup.
They did. We win this.
Yeah, the whole cup.
This is an artisanal drink.
Yep.
This is hand labor on this.
There's also a bottom layer of caramel drizzle. Yeah,
you don't say.
In addition to the side drizzle, whipped cream, a little bit of coffee. It's mostly dairy and sugar with some artificial pumpkin flavor. I mean, if I drank this whole thing, I would 1,000%
grow
up.
I'd be hospitalized.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, how old were you? I'm gonna PTSD off this for sure. How old were you when you started drinking coffee from like chain coffee places?
Probably like 18.
Okay. So I didn't. Yeah. It's always been very shocking now that I do. You know, you go into a Dunkin' or a Starbucks or something. Mm. Yeah, no, exactly.
Every time you get a chunk of munchkin.
You really do.
It's a chunk of soggy munchkin. Something. Sorry, go ahead.
I asked for a spoon because I looked at it and I said, surely this can't all go through the straw.
Yeah.
They said they didn't have spoons. They do have forks. They do have
fork. Are you going to pick out pieces of munchkin with a fork?
I'm always very surprised to see teenagers in Starbucks or Dunkin' or whatever ordering what I presume is effectively just this.
Yeah.
Milkshakes. Seven pumps of this, nine pumps of this, four pumps of this, 36 sugars. The caloric content, I can't even imagine what the caloric.
I don't even want to know.
I actually feel my heart rate rising simply just consuming five sips of this.
Right, not caffeine.
No.
Sugar.
No, like is there a paramedic on the budget?
Yeah.
You know, like, is there someone like Diddy outside the house when he's doing Toad? You know, is there like an ambulance outside waiting for me?
These pop star collaborations with fast food, like Travis Scott had a big one, right? McDonald's meal. You reviewed it for the newspaper. BTS had one.
Yeah, the BTS meal at McDonald's.
Why does it have to be pumpkin? I know it's about to be October. Why does it have to be?
It's a pumpkin spice thing.
I'm embarrassed to say this, but like, if these were like the chocolate munchkins,
you would be into it.
Might go. That might be a seven so
you're,
and a half.
Your complaint is not
the flavor.
It's not with the alchemy. It's with the specific choice of munchkin.
I mean, it's like definitionally vile.
Yeah.
But also the flavor is really rough.
Yeah. Yeah. Better or worse than the Grimace Shake?
Worse?
Equally undrinkable.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not drinkable. Also, like, how are you calling this a drink?
Yeah.
I know it goes through a straw, but like, how are you
barely a drink? Not if you get some munchkins.
No, stuck not at in all. So like I was saying before, this is about the memes and the ads.
Yeah.
There is a medium funny ad with Ice Spice and Ben Affleck.
We got to come up with a drink name, but it's not easy, right? Nowadays with social media, the kids, it's got to be authentic. How are people going to connect you with Dunkin'?
Yeah, I'm a Dunkin' guru.
I'm not seeing it.
Ice Spice, my fans are the Munchkins.
Where are you going with this?
Ice Spice Munchkins drink.
I got an idea. Collabs like they do, right? I spit bars with you. We're called Vanilla Ice Spice. Here I am. I'm with Dunkin'. You go.
Are they in the same room?
I don't know if they're in the same room.
Almost definitely not. It's feel all like they're over the shoulder shots.
Here's the real question. Who's too busy to be in the... It's Ice Spice who's definitely too busy to be in the Ben Affleck.
Ben is just hanging out.
Ben was at Dunkin'. They just happen to have a camera nearby.
Yeah.
This exists so that that ad can exist. This exists so that the memes that come from this can exist. It reminds me a lot of... I mean... Not to get in the weeds with like fast food marketing, but like every Domino's campaign is about some like very micro thing that makes for great narrative, but it's not like they're like, we'll fix a pothole in your small town.
Sure.
Nobody cares about the pothole.
Right.
But if you can build.
Or the tracker, the where's your pizza tracker?
The accuracy of the tracker has gone down recently and I'm very frustrated by that. You know, I stay on the tracker and it's like, it doesn't feel accurate. It doesn't live up.
Here's the issue though, for the Ice Spice thing. From a marketing standpoint, I think it's wrong. And
you think it's actually wrong?
It's like sort of too early. Like, I just don't think this is a phenomenon. Like,
you don't think Ice Spice is a phenomenon?
I don't think Ice Spice is a phenomenon on the level of having a signature drink at Dunkin' Donuts.
But I also think you're overstating what a signature, like, frankly, post Travis, like having a signature meal has.
You think the bar is low?
The bar is lower. And also Dunkin', look, Dunkin' did that big deal with Charli D'Amelio. Like, they're incredibly focused on internet culture. And I think they understand that there's a tremendous young fan base for presumably drinks like this. So I imagine that, like, partnering something like Ice Spice makes a lot of sense for them from a business perspective. And if it takes off, they can do 5 more Ice Spice drinks. But I think getting in early actually benefits them with young people.
Because now Ice Spice will forever be associated with pumpkin milkshakes.
No, imagine the next one. What if they do the chocolate one? What if they build a suite of drinks?
So should we break down just briefly why this drink exists? Beyond it being fall, Munchkin goes to pumpkin. Sure, they have pumpkin spice munchkins.
I just want to say the after effect of this, it's in the back of my
teeth are like sizzling.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Also, strikes me that when you get a piece of the munchkin through the straw, it's soggy, obviously. It tastes like a spitball. It's like hitting the back of your throat. Like, it's really gnarly. But it's also, yeah, it's just a tenuous connection to her. Like, Munch is her breakthrough hit. I get what I want, like, get what I want. Bitch, stay balanced, keep it a beam. No, to be mad, I be on the scene. Ask too fat, can't fit in a jean. Use my stitch, but it's not what it seems. But her breakthrough hit is not that big. So the idea that not only...
The New York Times would disagree with you.
I mean, it's great song, great song. But making the leap between, okay, Ice Spice's song is called Munch, so her fans are called Munchkins.
First of all, why are you being so literalist about this?
I just don't
know. Why are you being such a nerd?
I'm just mad that we tried this.
Okay, when I profiled Ice Spice towards the end of last year, came out at the beginning of this year. I mean, keep in mind, this is September.
Yeah.
This is 8 months ago that this story came out.
Yeah.
Ice Spice didn't even have an agreed upon name for the fan base. In the story, their Spice Rack.
Horrible.
What, was she going to do a collaboration with McCormick's if they picked the Spice Rack, the Spice Cabinet? Is that the next thing? But she and I had a conversation.
Pulling McCormick's from the top of your dome.
I'm a professional.
You're not a professional seasoner.
No, but I'm a professional podcaster. Absolutely. Spice Rack, Spice Cabinet, Spice Cadets,
Spice
and
Cadets.
Munchkins, which was like obviously the right one, but it wasn't even agreed upon, and she didn't even know which one she was going to throw her weight behind.
And here we are, Ben Affleck.
But the idea that you're like looking for some stronger connection, it's like, what's the connection between Travis and McDonald's besides marketing? What's the connection between the Cardi B Offset meal and McDonald's besides celebrity? Why does it have to...
Yeah.
It's also an item that's fine. By design ephemeral.
Yeah.
It's merch that's designed to disappear.
But there's no merch. There's not even a
cup. That's what I'm saying. It's ephemeral. Well, no, I'm going to take the sticker. I'm going to take it home.
Yeah.
That's going to be the
sticker that says 4 pumpkin munchkins.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to take that sticker home. This is like when I bought the Travis meal.
Yeah.
This is like a little, bought the Travis meal.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say who told me what or who told me what, but like I saved the, the ticket at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Where they're like the grill ticket or whatever. Yeah. They put it on the bag. I saved that, but I posted it. And then strangely, when the Travis McDonald's merch came out a few weeks later, there was a t-shirt that had the grill tag. And I was
the grill tag.
Oh, okay. Interesting. And then you ask a couple people and like, maybe it was inspired by
a post.
Okay. Could have happened.
Okay.
Where's my cut?
I don't think this has legs as a viral piece.
I don't think it's... Maybe the thing to say is it's not viral enough. Maybe it's not funny enough. Maybe it should be crazy.
Maybe there should be 8 pumpkin munchkins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or they should be like popping out of the thing. Or decorated. Like a Bloody Mary with a full chicken wing on it.
Yeah, like in the top of the dome. Like it should be like 3 or 4 munchkins literally jammed into that. Maybe that's the play.
Yeah.
I think it's
too normal.
I think there are probably high school kids.
Too horrible.
But I think there are probably high school kids who just drink whatever this was without the name, a version of this every day.
Yeah.
To me, the problem is not that it's too short-lived or that it's ephemeral. It's that it's not wacky enough.
It's too mainstream.
This is, I want, dare I say, this is a 1.
Oh, wow. The lowest snack score ever on podcast.
Lower than the fake Twizzler tongue.
Wow. Okay. I give it a three because I like caramel. I'm like, I'm fine to have a sip of a caramel coffee. You're going to
scrape, I'm going to get you like a long scraper and you could scrape it all off the bottom.
Yeah. But no, I mean, soggy munchkin in a drink is heinous.
Yeah. This,
back to the lab for these food scientists.
But that said, anytime that there will be a rapper fast food crossover product,
we'll just keep buying them.
I regret to inform you that we will keep buying those.
This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
On Eva?
Yeah.
Okay. I would literally probably rather do anything rather than continue to drink that drink. And that includes talking about Jan Wenner.
Yeah. Who's Jan Wenner?
Yeah. Daddy. Jan Wenner is the founder, longtime publisher, no longer, of Rolling Stone magazine. I should disclose, I freelanced for Rolling Stone for many years before I came to the New York Times.
Yeah.
Back in the 2000s.
I wrote for them a little bit.
I think that's enough distance, enough time has passed.
Yeah.
Jan Wenner gave an interview to our colleague, David Marchese, in connection with a book that he's got out. It's called The Masters, which just right off the rip. Tough name, conversations with a bunch of musicians who all happen to be old white guys.
Bono, Bob Dylan,
Mick
Pete
Jagger,
Townsend, Mick Jagger.
Yeah. Springsteen.
Yep. The usual suspects.
Yeah. All my faves, yeah. Everybody, all the posters I have on my wall at home. And then gave an interview to David in which David, I think very rightly said to him, essentially, hey, bro. Are there no women who are masters? Are there no black artists who are masters? Right. Are there, why is it just these guys?
Right.
And Jan, we'll put the excerpt up on the screen, but Jan basically said, women are not articulate about
their genius. I'll just read that quote.
I don't even want to say it out of my mouth.
Insofar as the women, just none of them were articulate enough on this intellectual level.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then he goes on to say, you know, Stevie Wonder, sure, genius. Maybe Marvin Gaye or Curtis Mayfield. I mean, they just didn't articulate at that level. He rephrases himself a couple times throughout this interview, which I thought was interesting. Like, you got to see a bit of the push and pull.
Of him trying to, like save it in real time?
Yeah, I mean, David Marchese literally says,
you can't say
I'll that. Let you rephrase that, yeah. You know? He says, I'll let you rephrase that. Which, like, if you're tip for anybody who's ever going to be interviewed, if a journalist says to you, I'll let you rephrase
you're
that.
You're not doing it right. You're not doing it right. If Isaac Chotiner is saying to you, I'll let you rephrase that.
Yeah. Like, it's
you took the L.
Yeah.
So, okay, a little bit of background first. We'll talk about the fallout from this. A little bit of background. Over the last 5 years, there have been like two books about Jan Wenner and Rolling Stone. Joe Hagan wrote Sticky Fingers, which is a very, very dishy tell-all. He had access to Wenner and also interviewed 100-some-odd other people.
Yep.
A lot of very revealing stories, not totally flattering.
Excellent, excellent, excellent biography.
Very, like, very important. If you're going to spend X amount of years on something, this is the way to do it.
Yeah, the level of research, the level of reporting, super, 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 super high. Hagan was a former colleague of mine at New York Magazine.
Right.
And I wrote a piece when the book was coming out because they had all these events planned to promote it. Right. And Jan was very excited about it. And then he read the book, and he went totally, totally cold on Joe Hagan. Didn't speak with him again. If you read Sticky Fingers, you would not be surprised by
any of this.
Any of this.
No. And also,
but it's a big book. It's a big, long book. So not a lot of people maybe who didn't know who Jan Wenner was spent the time with
it. And also, it's like if you are, at least for me, a music critic, music writer of a certain generation, you understand that there were certain proclivities in the coverage that Rolling Stone would give this generation of artists over the years.
Yeah, the blind spots were known.
It is still seared in my brain, the cover line, "World Meet Mick Jagger Solo Artist."
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they ask him about
in this. In the interview, and, yeah.
Ask him about this.
Him bumping up a star for a Mick solo album.
I very vividly remember looking at that as a young person. And like, even though I didn't really know very much about the Rolling Stones at that time or care very much about Mick Jagger, instinctually knowing that that was wrong, just everything about it felt icky.
Yeah, it's like the Robert Plant album of the year for me. You know what I mean? Where you're like, okay, I see what's going on here. Mm-hmm.
Then Wenner put out his own book, which I did not read, but you've read.
I did not. I read some of the Wenner autobiography. I was like, I already read Sticky Fingers. Okay. I don't need the
sanitized.
I don't need the sanitized version of this.
And now this.
Yes.
And so this interview came out a few days ago. And I'll be candid. When I read it, I was just like, nothing surprising in it.
Sure.
Like, obviously, he said the quiet part out loud. That's something that a lot of people have been caught doing. But I guess as someone who's been in this world for a long time, I was not surprised to know that this person held this view.
But it managed to transcend.
It broke out.
The audience, energy. Yes. And I think to me, one of the things that did it, in addition to the sort of absurd on its face contention that female and black artists are not intellectual, is the use of articulate. Over and over again.
Terrible.
I think like even the most old of old white guys know that like.
Apparently not.
I mean, you would think.
I mean, also he calls the book The Master about a bunch of old white. Like, come on, bro. What are you doing here?
I know.
So what has been the fallout from this breaking out of the echo?
Jan Wenner was swiftly removed from the board of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Which he founded.
Which he founded. Yeah, he was among the founders, but he says in Sticky Fingers, he's like, this is my thing. Like, this is Rolling Stone's thing. Like, this is my building. Like, this is my canon. And for many years, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has been criticized for its lack of
women, lack of
female artists. And black performers. Yeah. Now that's changed in recent years. You have rappers starting to get in there. You know, Jay is in there now. Pac and Biggie are in there. You know, there's Kate Bush is going to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year.
Sheryl Crow last year.
Yeah, like they're obviously moving towards diversifying this. And also, like, you run out of the quote unquote masters eventually, and they got to do this every year. So,
must they?
I mean, that's a separate question. Yeah. But, you know, reporting says that it was unanimous that the members of the board, except Jon Landau, former Rolling Stone writer and Springsteen's longtime manager, I guess stuck with Jan. But everybody else, you know, Irving Azoff, Troy Carter is on the board of this, you know, longtime music exec, once Gaga's manager. You know, there's some new blood in the mix and there's some very old blue blood in the mix. And all of them were like, okay, Jan, like, time to go. And it's interesting that this was the way that they chose.
Which would certainly seem to reflect, like, I would imagine, also pre-existing frustration.
Yeah, I was going to say, like
convenient this is vector.
Basically, the only thing they could take away from him.
Yeah.
He'd already sold his media empire. He's no longer running Rolling Stone. His son still works there in a prominent role. One of his sons, but he's in the twilight of his career. And I do think it's interesting the way we sort of like eventually give like a small spanking to these men who have been in power for a really long time and maybe didn't execute their influence with the most open arms or you know, these gatekeepers eventually, once they run out of power, get a little comeuppance. But like
this, 50 years late.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, I is this like, does this mean anything for Jan to no longer be part of
the Long Island? Terrible thing to say, but it's like, it's near the top of the obituary.
Interesting.
Which is an awful way of saying, but I do think in a case like this, it does. What's the opposite of putting a bow on something?
You're right. End?
You know, it's whatever the
opposite. It recontextualizes everything that came before. And it sort
I think it appears in the first five paragraphs.
I think you're right. And it ties together, I think, what a lot of people have said and knew about this person and this publication. Like, you think back to, you know, pioneering rock critic like Ellen Willis, who was always saying that Rolling Stone was
for the boys,
bad on these issues, you know, and there's no shortage of other writers, thinkers, musicians themselves sort of coming out against this club. But I think like it is a good reminder, especially I think to younger music fans, think of any institution that you hold in esteem, any publication, ourselves included, you know, and any organization, the Recording Academy, the Grammys, you know, and like you open the door, just a bunch of old guys with retrograde opinions. Yeah. Like it's like, it's almost it's rote at this point, but like,
I think
these people don't get to decide what good art is, you know, or especially now, like it's,
and does the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame change radically because of this? Does the,
or is the brand of Rolling Stone dinged? I mean, like Olivia Rodrigo is on the cover of Rolling Stone right now. Like, and she said something she'd wanted for her whole life. You know, it's like, it's still, that still means something to people, I think, in the same way that a Grammy Award does. But I do think it's worth both artists and fans, like taking that beat to think like, okay,
who are we really asking for the validation for them? Speaking of, truly speaking of, I spent some time with Puff recently.
Yep.
For a profile that came out a few days ago and will be in print a few days from now.
What did you call Sean Combs?
Like to his face?
Yeah.
I call him Puff.
Puff.
Yeah.
And he responds to
That's the generationally appropriate thing for me to call him, I think.
Right.
I imagine like younger people might call him Diddy.
Diddy, sure.
I think people in his employ might call him Love.
Do you think that's where I was going this line of questioning, is does anyone call him Love? Which you said in your story, he changed his name legally to Love?
Middle name.
Okay, cop out. my middle name is Munchkin.
Hold the driver's license so I know it's real.
I feel it's very important that I clear that up. I decided that I'm just going to go with the name Diddy.
But didn't you change it to Love officially?
Yeah, Diddy's my nickname. Love is my real name.
Okay.
So I just changed my name to Love. Sean Love Combs. That's what it says on my driver's license. That's my official name, Love.
Yeah, no one in front of me said, hey, Love.
Yeah.
Like, that didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe certain people who are in his employ, tough to say. Most called him Mr. Combs.
Okay.
A few people called him Sean.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people, if you're of a certain age and you came up in the 90s, like, you probably call him Puff or Puffy.
Okay.
That'd be my thing.
All right.
Yeah. This is a story that I'd actually worked on a bit this time last year.
Right.
This album that came out,
Love,
the Love album Off the Grid, was originally supposed to come out, or a version of it. I don't know if it's changed radically, but a version of it was supposed to come out last summer or last fall. We spent a bunch of time together actually last summer. None of that made it into the piece because there's only so much stuff I could fit into the piece. But it was in connection last time with the BET Awards. Lifetime Achievement Award or whatever. This year, there was a VMA's Global Icon Award. I mean, this is like all these awards are fake. Like
speaking of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Speaking of institutions and the falsity of institutions, I mean, these awards are not real. They exist so that famous people will remain tethered to a brand, that famous people will show up and give performances and give a sense of historical continuity. Having A-list celebrities justifies the younger people. Having the younger people justifies the A-list celebrities. This is all,
Welcome to the VMAs.
Yeah, I feel bad a little bit, sort of being like, this is how the sausage gets made, but this is kind of how the sausage gets made. He was getting the Global Icon Award, which was previously won by Foo Fighters, I think. So, like, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Yeah.
And put this album out. And in sort of in the spirit of, like, it's a big comeback week. Lots happening.
Is it a big comeback? Or is it a Kiss the Ring, Flower Ceremony, part one? Because I imagine we're going to be doing this for Puff or Diddy or Love, whatever you want to call them, every 5 or 10 years.
I think so. What I've been struck
until
by,
the end of time.
The thing that I was struck by in this specific moment, it is a little bit of a Bad Boy comeback, like having like the Metro Boomin song that's a Mario Winans song, having the King Combs song that's referencing Can't Stop, Won't Stop, which is a Puff line. I mean, that's his son, but still.
Having Mace making sports content with Cameron, as discussed last week on the show.
But there is a bit of, and we talked about this in the later part of the day that we spent together. When you think of the battles in the 90s, Puff sampling records from the 70s are being like, that's too obvious. Like, how dare you draw a direct line between rap music and like the soul and the meaningful soul music and disco music of the 70s, which like in retrospect seems lunacy that people were mad about it. And yet, if you think of the last 2 or 3 years in pop, it's exactly the same thing. And we talked
a little. Don't you think it's a little stupider now?
Yes, I do think it's a little stupider now. I do think it's less artful. I do think the types of producers that are making those records are not adjusting or accommodating the texture in any meaningful way. Like, they're basically just like slapping it on.
I mean, Bad Boy was also like forming a canon and laying out a lineage.
But this is the look, in my most generous argument, I think you could say the same thing about some of these pop producers today. But I do think on a fundamental level, what Puff and the Hitman, first of all, Stevie J was there, did not lick
his lips. The people doing the real work.
Okay, Stevie J was there, did not lick his lips, did not do any reality television stuff, just like they're making music.
Just being a guy.
Just being a guy. Hitman, Stevie J. Incredible. If you think about, I mean, you mentioned lineage, you think about what was happening at that time. Hip hop is on the verge of becoming the center of pop culture lingua franca, but it is not quite there yet. And between Death Row and Bad Boy, that's the stretch of time where it's American pop music is firmly hip hop. And what Puff is doing is at one point making direct connections with the music of 20 to 30 years prior and saying, if you like that, you really have no reason not to like this, but also doing it in a way that's going to appeal very, very broadly outside of an audience that grew up only on R&B music. But he's doing it to make crossover, cross-demographic American pop music. I'm curious how we'll look at the last few years, 10 years from now.
Yeah.
I don't really know if this is like some kind of seismic thing where like the ground is settling and something new is going to come from this.
I think it's Blue stupid. By Bebe Rexha is really going to age well.
I actually low-key think that song's better today than it was 6 months ago. But anyway, we'll come back to that. Well, that's like Podcast Lux 2030, me, you, and Bebe Rexha. It's going to be great. How do we get on this? We're talking about Puff and the lineage. So yes, Puff's making an implicit argument. And look, you were asking if we're going to be celebrating Puff every 5 or 10 years. I do think that that's true, but I do think there's a specific valence to the current musical moment where celebrating Puff makes a lot of sense. And to me, look, I said this on Twitter, like, I don't care about bucket list. I don't have like a thing where I'm like, I've got to interview A, B, C, and D. Yeah. I've been very fortunate to interview a lot of people and spend a lot of time around a lot of people who I admire creatively. Puff, though, you kind of...
He was really high up on the non-existent bucket list.
Yeah, you got to take that. You got to take that chance. And so, you know, there is this new album out. The album is
inessential.
Fine. It's funny. If you think of the last Diddy record, its solo record is 17 years ago, but 13 years ago was Last Train to Paris, which was slept on in its day. But actually, it was quite prophetic about a lot of things that were going to happen in the 2010s.
And has a good reputation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But I would say it grew into that reputation. Yeah. It didn't have that on release day. Where does Puff fit in the current musical ecosystem? It's actually really striking. Like, when he raps on the remix of the Metro Boomin Weekend 21 Savage Mario Winans ripoff song. Yeah. They ain't real and they ain't Puff. Ain't no place in this world that my feet ain't
touch. I got visions that cost millions and make billions. Baby girl, we can make love and make trillions. Damn, baby, you my curse and my crush. I walk to the ends of the earth for your touch. Ride for you, cry for you, die for you. Never gonna say goodbye to you. Never lie to you.
Sounds great.
He sounds exactly great. Like he sounded when I was so 9 or 10 years old.
So good.
He really does.
That kind of just like seductive whisper.
Yep.
Like kind of like I'm talking to you. Like I'm just like.
And the flow is signature. Like
really? Right. Cause it's like an imperfect flow.
Yeah.
And he really made hay with an imperfect flow as someone who never aspired really to be a rapper of any kind. I mean, I don't know if this is a story that he was telling a lot in the 90s, but he was talking about the making of I'll Be Missing You. This isn't in the story. He was like, you know, I was in the house. I was depressed. I was like on the floor of my living room. I couldn't sit up. I was, you know, it was just in inordinate amounts of pain and trauma. And then I heard the police. I mean, this, I'm sure.
After like, the death of
Biggie. After the death of Biggie Smalls, after Biggie was murdered in 1997. And said he heard the police song on, presumably on MTV or something. And sort of like willed himself and said, that's it. Like, I'm going to do something with that and kind of somehow got to the studio. I mean, I'm sure it's like lightly apocryphal, but I was also Googling around. I didn't see him. I didn't see that story, at least in my first two pages of Google search results.
Google's broken.
Yeah. But anyway, here's a person who was not dying to be I think he was dying to be a star, but maybe not dying to be
that
a rapper,
kind of star,
not that kind of star. I think I say in the piece, he was destined to be a personality, not a frontman or something along those lines. And every few years subsequent to that, there's this moment of like Puff's back. But what is Puff back? Like if you listen to the new album, it's like, yes, he's organized. He's orchestrated. He's managing editored. This entire thing. And on
he scrolled his contact list.
Yeah. And sometimes he shows up and raps, and sometimes he lets other people do the emotional heavy lifting. It's a song about Kim Porter who passed away, but it's basically a Babyface song. I interviewed Babyface for the piece. And Babyface, first of all, Babyface keeps it a buck. Absolutely keeps it a buck. And Babyface is basically like, I'd never been in the studio with Puff. Like, you know, we're sort of from competing.
Yeah, they were rivals.
Competing visions of R&B in the early to mid 90s. Babyface with LaFace, Puff with Uptown, and then the early years of Bad Boy. And Puff very much was pulling R&B towards hip hop and infusing hip hop into R&B. And Babyface was doing a lot of gentlemanly records. That's sort of the tradition that Babyface comes from. He said, we loved differently, which is just about the most beautiful way that you can say, I did not F with these people and what they were doing to my music.
Yeah.
And Babyface was like, look, I went in the studio not knowing what to expect. I didn't never worked with him before, really not even spend that much time with him apart from like bumping into him socially. And he's like, he doesn't know how to play the stuff. He doesn't play the instrument.
Yeah, Babyface is a musician.
He doesn't know the words for certain kinds of musical gestures or flourishes, but he knows what he wants. He emphasizes, he's like, the way that he talks about what he needs from you, he's like, that's a producer. He's like, I recognize that. That's real. He's like, underappreciated because he doesn't have the skill set, quote unquote, but that's real. And I thought that was a moving thing for Babyface, who does not take any guff to say.
And I mean, it's always land, like he's been a pop culture figure for as long as I can remember. No Way Out, one of my first CDs.
Sure.
You
1997.
Know, yeah, right off the back
of
Biggie's death. And even through the MTV era, like Bad Boy for Life, you know, Ben Stiller in the video.
Hey, how you doing? Puffy or Diddy P Papa? Papa Diddy Pop? I'm sorry, I don't know what you're calling yourself these days, but Mr. Daddy, listen, glad you're here in the neighborhood. Welcome. But this, golf balls through the window, it's not going to fly, all right?
He, you know, the vote or die, Diddy.
I'm just thinking in the moment where he gets Young Miami, a.k.a. Carisha, on FaceTime.
And when you were with her.
When I was with him. And he's rapping Bad Boy for Lila. He's like, don't worry if I wear arms are and like doing the gesture on and she's on FaceTime. And she's just like, she's like,
she's probably too young for that song.
Oh,
but his ability to not be to be like a little bit of a clown, but never embarrassing is like, is unparalleled.
I will say, like, I left that day, and we have to get into the details.
Do you want to talk about what you guys did? Because you played it subtle in the piece.
I did. But I will say, I left that day uncommonly motivated for my own life. Forget about the story. Forget about what he's doing. I made sort of like a casual reference and said, oh, you know, like I've been thinking a lot about my own health lately, like what I could do to improve A and B. And he's like, how many steps do you take a day? And I was like, oh, you know, it's really varies. Like I'm on the couch a lot. And he's like, 15,000. Good God, you 15,000. Wow. He's like, and I was like, do you
15?
15.
Not 10.
Not 10. 15. It's Puff. Puff's doing 15. It was like 15. And I was like, ah, you know, it's hard. Like my brain is going. And he was like, you got to clear that out. He's like, it's good for your spirit. And every little thing that I mentioned, he like rose to the moment, you know, like I like a little problem, like a logistical thing that was happening. And he was just like, we're about solutions over here. Like, what do you need? And I was like, it was just like unbelievable. And I was like, you're like this every day.
With all everyone,
every person, like even me, who's going to be gone at like 9 p.m. When I talked to Guy Osiri for the piece, one of the details that Guy Osiri gave me is that Puff has a bathroom mirror, which I did not see for the record. There's a lot of bathrooms in the house, including, and there's also Kerry James Marshall and an Anish Kapoor and a Tracy Emin. But there's a lot of bathrooms. I didn't make it to this bathroom.
You probably didn't make it to the good paintings either.
Can you imagine the paintings that are upstairs?
Those are warm-up paintings.
Yes. That on the bathroom mirror, there's all these sort of affirmations and positive quotes. And like, it is like that thing is real. And like, I don't know.
DJ Khaled, who?
Really? And I don't know what happens when like everybody goes to bed. I truly have no idea. But like the relentlessness, the purity of the positivity. If you look on Instagram for the past week of him drumming up interest by like stomping his way through New York, it's a little goofy.
I'm not playing with you, New York. I'm going to give you this love. It's a love rampage. It's a love.
Yeah, it's a tiny bit. I don't think anyone's going to listen to this album.
No, but the positivity, listen to the positivity in the same way that like the ads and the memes for the Ice Spice drink
are the
like,
point.
More
yeah, the product.
Is,
yeah.
The product is Puff.
Yeah.
That's the product. And if one of these songs happens to hit, great. And if they don't, Puff had a great week, regardless.
All right. Would you do?
Ask a hard question. Ask the question.
Had you ever been in a sauna before?
Maybe one time when I was like a teenager or like in college. Maybe once when I was young.
Did he suggest this to you on the spot? And were you in the house or did you go to a fancy spot?
So basically, no. So like there's a house. And on the property, there's like other buildings on the property.
Sure.
So like one building is where the studio was, which is where I was at the beginning. Again, he's an incredibly astute creator of his own mythology.
Yeah.
And so this happened last summer too, but it happened again right when I walked in, when we're sort of like navigating like, oh, where am I going to sit? Like, where am I going to watch? Who's important to what? He's just like, looks, he's like, fly on the wall. And it's like, he gets it.
Yeah.
Journalism.
He's thinking about it.
He knows.
Yeah.
And he said it last summer too. He was like, you going to be a fly on the wall today? And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to be a fly on the wall. So I had watched him in the studio for like a half hour, 45 minutes, right at the beginning. We leave there and we go, he has like a backyard. There's a pool, you know, it's like a bench. We go sit on the bench in our chat.
This is the bench in the yard.
Yeah. Bench in the yard. Yeah,
for thinking.
So, yeah. It's casual.
Yeah.
And we're talking and he gets very deep, very quick. We don't have loads of time. And I'm like very relieved because he's like going in. He mentions that he's done Toad, which is like, look, if I'm saying weed trips, you know, I don't know what the hell Toad's doing.
So he's talking about like psychedelic.
Yeah. Like hallucinogens.
Yeah.
And, you know, Puff's been the Burning Man a bunch of times. Yeah. You know, he described himself as like a top level hippie. So anyway, this is all like, We're maybe 30 minutes in to the interview.
Quick detour. Do you think it was literal when he said he keeps a paramedic
outside
when he trips?
Yes.
Okay. Amazing.
Yeah. Yes. I won't get it. Yes. The answer is yes. And at a certain point, not that long into the conversation, I mean, really, like, we're not even 30 minutes in to the tape rolling. He's like, sort of like.
He's like, you need a schvitz?
No, he was like, do you sauna?
As a verb.
Yeah. And I was like. I do today, you know, like not normally, yeah. I do today. And then I was provided with a pair of shorts, which obviously I didn't come from.
Did they come and measure you?
No, thankfully.
Fonsworth Bailey just popped out and hit you with a measuring tape.
No, so I was provided with a pair of shorts, went into a bathroom and changed. And we went and continued the interview in the sauna. And frankly, a lot of the most kind of intense, incendiary political and business conversation happened when we were in the sauna. I was absolutely freaked out the whole time that the heat was so intense that it would fry both my, I had both.
Was it dry or wet?
What do you mean?
The sauna, like, was it steamy?
Yeah, yeah. What's
or
the other
option? They have dry heat sauna, like infrared or whatever.
I'm unfamiliar. Again,
all right. We're gonna go to Korean.
Is that
Korean
spa or
something?
Schwitz?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Podcast deluxe at the Schwitz.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll try all the different saunas.
And then afterwards, you come out. So this is in a separate building. Come out, and he like goes out. There's like a door that's like a back door. We come in one door, and then there's a back door, and we go out, and you're sort of on like a balcony that's like roughly the size of this rug, and there's like patio furniture. Chairs, a couch, a table, and a plunge tank. And I sort of like dip my finger in. I was like, and he was like, oh, we're going in. And he just like jumps right in. And he's like, you've done this? And I was like, I've never done this. He was like, all right, no time like the present. And
so you did a full cold plunge.
Twice.
You hit it again.
Yeah, yeah. I did.
So you kind of liked it.
I found the cold plunge more enjoyable than the sauna.
So you're gonna.
I don't like heat in general.
You would do a sauna, a cold plunge every morning when you woke up if you could afford it.
On my Wim Hof.
Yeah.
Like when I'm hanging out with Frank Ocean, like me and Frank and Wim, like we're just gonna be all like. Yeah. It was among the stranger things I've ever had to do for a profile. You know, I've done some unusual things. I've gone kayaking. I've done work. I did workout. I worked out with Morgan Wade recently. Earlier this summer.
Yep.
Really, I am on a health journey, I guess. And then this. And how do you say, like, the real thing is, like, if Puff looks at you and says, do you sauna?
Yeah, the answer is yes.
The answer is always yes. Anyway, it was an incredibly bizarre and wacky day, full of great quotes and great times. And now I sauna. Where that money at?
This podcast is supported by Nutrafol. Hair thinning is never just about your hair. It could be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets key root causes of hair thinning. And my Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand. Discover your root causes at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
So every week on Popcast Deluxe, we do a song of the week in addition to a snack.
Yes.
This week, instead of a straight-ahead song, which we've played around with this format a little bit, but we have music used in interesting ways.
Yeah, I mean, they are songs.
Yes.
Or they are at root, they are songs.
Yes. Yeah. So you have one and I have one. We're going to start with you.
I have two. Technically, I have two.
Okay. One idea.
Two-ish. Yes, one idea. okay, so having just told a whole story about getting improbably close to a celebrity.
Sure. Physically.
I also want to say that the entire circumference of the cold plunge tank was like I couldn't fit.
Oh, you guys went in together.
Yeah.
No, I imagine alternate.
Oh, no. Like sauna together, cold plunge tank together.
Okay.
There might be a photo. Not huge.
Yeah.
Right. Getting improbably close to celebrity. I mean, it's something, you know, we profile people. I think we're aware more than most people of how hard it is for like an average person to get close to a celebrity.
Sure.
Although there are
I see where you're going
with
this.
There can be these kind of like ruptures in the
space-time continuum
that allow for a kind of unexpected collision of like a regular non-famous person and famous people.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about Well, this is about one individual TikToker. But then there's another TikToker I'll talk about afterwards. So I'm going to talk about Harry Daniels.
Harry Daniels.
And Harry has been doing a lot of what I would describe as troll content for a while. I went back pretty far on his page, not just doing music-related content. I would say a lot of it is comedy, some just troll content. But in the last few weeks, 2-3 weeks, has been having these videos go relatively viral where he's unusually close to famous people, usually at like a signing or like, you know, when talk shows were up and running, people are signing autographs like before they get into their SUV to leave.
Yep. These in between spaces.
Yeah, red carpet. He was maybe at the Tommy Hilfiger New York Fashion Week, like near the back entrance. He's extremely gifted at finding the place where he can get close to a celebrity. And then
it's a real skill. It changes every couple of years.
It's something I would never be comfortable with personally, but like boundaries do not appear to be an issue for this individual. And what he's doing is he is singing snippets of songs that the various performers that he is bumping into, he sings to them their songs. Sometimes he'll say, "Can I sing you a song?" And sometimes he'll just launch into it. Why don't we just show something and then we'll break down what this is like. The first time I saw one of these, I was like, oh, this, he thinks he's really good.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, you know, he's not. Like,
he's really bad.
Yeah.
But like, oh, you know, like the first one. And then by the third one, I was like, oh, I see what you're doing, Blair. I see what's happening here. And it all culminated recently when he sees Doja Cat. And Doja Cat, who is as good at the internet as any of us.
Troll recognized troll.
Really? Like, Doja Cat sees, he says, "Doja, Doja." She sees him and immediately knows. Like, maybe this is a setup. Do you think this is a setup?
I don't, but
it's like,
usually I do, but not
I
this.
I know, but yeah. Maybe it is.
I just think she scrolls a lot.
Absolutely. She sees him and she knows what's coming. And she's like, "Sing for me.
Hit me."
And he really goes in to paint the town red, and it is up here and down here and then out there and then to the left.
Song of the week.
Oh,
bitch, I've been waiting for
Give me something.
Bitch, I said what I said. I'd rather be famous instead. I let all that get to my head. I don't care, I paint the town red.
Oh, it is wild. And she is just absolutely soaking up. She loves every minute of it. I don't know if there's a next thing with this.
With this kid.
Yeah. But I mean, he's doing a lot. Like I said, he's doing other kinds
of content. He's going to take over for Jimmy Fallon, actually.
Certainly doesn't need a writer. I'll say that. But I will say, like, look, cringe is a concept that has been thrown around a lot in the last couple years. I rarely experience it. Like, I just feel like I'm immune to it. Maybe my sensors have been so dulled by the years of cringy content. I feel genuinely unwell when I watch these videos, knowing that the gap between him understanding what he's doing and the unsuspecting person, not Doja, but the other folks, the unsuspecting person, like that space, I'm so uncomfortable. And eventually it resolves and everybody, it's clear what's happening, but it's a visceral kind of discomfort that I experience watching.
That's why we come to music.
That is what music. But speaking of discomfort, so there are two different kinds of cringe or cringe adjacent TikTok things that have really been jumping out at me. The second one, we covered briefly, not us, but our colleagues on Styles. That's DJ Mandy.
Yeah.
So DJ Mandy has been making videos doing car crash, demolition derby, freelance Hellraiser blend of unlikely songs and sounds from varying genres, different tempos, different métiers, different moods, it is truly chaotic. The one thing I will say is I have not figured out if what she's doing on her setup is actually connected to the sound or if she's pre-making the mix.
If it's all then, just a bit.
If it's pre, well, I mean, it's definitely a bit, yeah. But if she's pre-making the mix and then acting out the mixing.
Or if she's mixing songs. Live.
Palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy, there's vomit on his sweater already. Mom's spaghetti, he's 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 spaghetti.
Is this a comment on everyone is a DJ culture?
I don't actually think it is. Okay. I think it's an extremely refined, mature comedy bit that uses music as the vector. Olivia Rodrigo has been commenting. There's ones that use recent Olivia Rodrigo songs. There's one that uses 1,000 Miles and I Don't Bleep With You. There's one with Louis Capaldi. There's another one with Sir Mix-a-Lot.
I mean, it could be girl. It sounds like you're describing girl talk.
That's what I'm saying. It's girl talk. It's freelance Hellraiser, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, what's really uncanny about it is all the component parts are wrong. And yet somehow 75% of the videos kind of hit. She should probably DJ our first party.
Okay.
Like
sold.
Yeah.
Mashups are back.
Absolutely. It reminds me a lot of... I mean, obviously, it reminds me of like radio scroll in the classic sense. You really are. You don't know what you're going to stumble on. But there is like it seems like a fairly high level musical intelligence underneath all of this that's mixing unlikely things in ways that sound quote unquote wrong. But there's something fundamentally right underneath that. And it is also it triggers in me some of that same discomfort. It's not the Harry Daniels discomfort, but a tiny bit of discomfort of like, is this supposed to live together? You haven't watched any of these videos?
Just the ones you sent me.
Yeah.
But I do think unlike our singing guy, she probably has a career ahead of her as a DJ.
And also a comedian. I mean, this is the thing. There's a, you know, on TikTok, like it'll sort of say search for so-and-so. Like, one of the recommended searches that came up was DJ Mandy laughing or breaking character, which reminds me of Pinky Doll.
Yep.
Look, this is someone who is doing an extremely refined comic bit. And I think there's probably more comedy to come on the back end of that. Anyway, a lot of discomfort on TikTok. My TikTok algo is absolutely cooked and washed. And I am beset by misery every time I open the app, but these have been some things that have jolted me out of that particular misery. What do you have?
You know what's bringing me joy?
I would love to know.
The third season of The Morning Show on Apple Plus.
It is time to smash and shatter. Let's burn it all down.
We should finish what we started.
Are we on the AARP podcast?
Here's where I'm at with television right now. And then we'll get to the music component of this. But there's so much to watch. And yet none of it is interesting or good to me. Like the depression that I feel when I think about
like loading up a streaming service,
it's just like, I don't know if it's the strike. I don't know if it's the time of year, like at least Survivor's coming back. Thank God. But like it weighs on me and like I consume a lot of content. I want to be
entertained.
I just like every show that's supposed to be good is bad. Every show that's supposed to be okay is horrible. Mm. The Morning Show, they just don't make TV like this right now. This is movie stars. This is Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, Billy Crudup doing the most insane line readings I've ever heard on television, like going full late period Pacino every episode, just like coked out of his mind in character as the television executive, CEO. Third season just came back. It's as crazy as it's ever been.
Where does one view this show?
On Apple.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody views this show.
No. Where does one view this
show? You know, nobody views this show because so much of the functionality on the Apple Plus streaming service is broken.
Yes. I'm like, How could you?
I'm like, if people were watching this, you wouldn't have to scroll to the end of season two to see the season three episode.
Is that true?
Yeah. Like the button to get to season three directly is broken. Anyway, this show obviously costs way too much money to be neglected culturally as it is.
Yeah, sure.
But it is really entertaining and the performances are phenomenal. And in the second episode of this season, there is a needle drop that, you know, I'm on the record. I do not like The Bear. I do not care what Wilco song is played on The Bear. You know, like this is, you want a real needle drop? Come to the morning show. I'll do a light spoiler. Yeah. We'll play a clip of it. Second episode of the morning show, new season. They're being, the show goes dark, chaos while they're filming the show, the morning show, the titular morning show. They don't know what's going on. They think maybe it's an active shooter. The lights go out. They stop filming. Everybody's panicking, locking doors, trying to get out of the control room, whatever. All of a sudden the lights come back on and they realize it's not an active shooter, but a cyber attack.
Okay.
And at that exact moment, what comes in but the booming beats of Lex Luthor and Waka Flocka Flames Hard in the Paint blasting over the sound
system. Put it in the Library of Congress.
Is it over?
I hope so.
Whitey is still on.
Switch is on.
Someone's in the system.
This is such a beautiful use of music. Like whoever decided that this is the punchline of the cyber attack.
Who's a music supervisor?
I don't know who the music supervisor is on the morning
They're
show.
They're going to DM us.
Yeah. But you deserve
it. We await your DM.
And it just reminded me also how good this song is and how much of, frankly, the drill music that came after can be traced directly back to Flockafelli and Lex Luger and Waka specifically.
Flockafelli, a top 20 rap album of that decade?
Yeah. Just a glorious moment of TV. Yeah. Really caught me off guard. I've gone back and watched it like 3 or 4 times since then. So let's just go out with Hard in the Paint by Waka Flocka Flame. See, Gucci, that's my Gucci, that's my Gucci. That's, I hang in the jail with them hit squad. Walk a flock of flame, one hood, one hood. Riding real slow, bending corners. Walk a flock of, walk a, 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 walk a. That is our show, and it is most assuredly our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast, every podcast deluxe, tinyurl.com/podcast deluxe. That is on YouTube. Email us podcast@nytimes.com with your questions. We will be taking questions generally, just not this week. Get in the Discord, get in the Facebook group. It's tinyurl.com/podcast discord or /podcast Facebook, and subscribe to podcast anywhere you get your audio and or audio visual content. And that would be YouTube, Spotify, Apple. Right next to the morning show, undoubtedly. If you're dosing the morning show back to back with podcast deluxe, let us know.
We
appreciate you.
Also, hopefully kicking into a live event soon. We'll let y'all know. Thank you, as always, to Sawyer Roque. Thank you to Jamie Heffetz, our editor. Also to Karen Gans, Pedro Rosado, Leslie Davis, and Pat Gunther. We'll be back next week.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.